Welcome to the Cairns Writes Podcast, home of science fiction, fantasy, and horror author Michael Cairns, me. If you like what you hear today, you can find more at cairnswrites.com and download free sci-fi novella, Childhood Dreams.
In episode 2 of A Change of Status, our heroine went back to the underworld, found a very peculiar necklace, and met a being called Seeker. She also bargained for her life. A Change of Status, Episode 3. Scarlet squeaked and yanked the necklace off, holding it away from herself. At the same time, their guide took her elbow and steered her firmly away from the stool and back into the press. She stuffed the necklace in her pocket, avoiding the curious looks from Martin as they rushed through the market. More stools, more strange-looking people, but eventually they emerged from the crush, out from the corridor of stools, and came to a crossroads. Was it still called a crossroads when there were, like, 7 corridors? The thin man took them down one without hesitating, and the matting disappeared from beneath their feet, the lights dimming to one naked bulb every 10 feet or so. She looked down, watching her squelching converse, and the rat that ran carelessly over her feet. She shrieked, stopping just short of jumping into Martin's arms. "What is it?" Martin was there, concerned and worried, and her face reddened, glad suddenly for the dim lighting.
Nothing, really, sorry. Just surprised, that's all.
The thin man smiled.
"You are deep beneath London. This is more the rat's home than it will ever be ours. We are trespassing here."
She nodded, her mouth filling with moisture. Was that supposed to make her feel better?
Probably not, thinking about it.
They continued, the smell of mould growing stronger, the soft drip of water encroaching on the muffled conversations following them from the market. The tunnel branched, and as the thin man stepped to the left, she hesitated. The way ahead was dark, the light bulbs continuing in the other direction.
"Any chance your master lives down that one?"
The thin man shook his head, still walking. "Damn it." Martin patted her on the shoulder. "Don't worry. I have the strongest feeling I know who we are going to meet. We have an understanding, he and I." The phrase brought back images of the huge scaled man she'd met last time she'd been here, and she shuddered. Was he going to be wanting entertaining again? She could still see her feet as she followed them into the darkness, but soon even they disappeared. The noises grew louder, the water sounding from all around them, the scratching she was now fairly certain was rats, coming from above and below. This was a little like being summoned to the head teacher's office. Her imagination was providing things far worse than what was likely to happen. Although, underworld, skinny guy with a knife? Her imagination was probably getting it just right. Her feet came back into view, and with them the walls, slick and covered in orangey-green slime. The light was blue, almost white, and came from everywhere, slight but strong enough for her to see that the thin man had stopped and was pushing the wall. With the faintest of groans, the hidden door swung in and he vanished from view. Martin followed, and she hurried to get in before she was left alone in the dark tunnel. Beyond lay a small set of steps, which she climbed, and stepped out onto a walkway. The light was bright here, and she squinted as the gloom fell away. She looked around, mouth hanging open. They stood on the edge of a swimming pool, though not like she was ever going in there. The water was the source of the light, glowing, filling the room with the white iridescence. Despite that, the top of the water was littered with flecks of dirt and dust. She thought they were alone, and was about to ask the thin man what was going on, when the huge man she'd met before burst from the pool, water streaming from his scales. He came almost completely out of the water, before crashing back down, sending waves over the edge of the pool to lap around her beleaguered converse. She stepped back as he came to the side of the pool, resting his arms on it and staring up at them. His face split apart, the scales shifting like sand from a buried foot emerging from the beach.
"Scarlet, Martin, how lovely to see you. Please, make yourselves comfortable."
Scarlet looked around for a chair, then back at him. He shrugged.
"I'm sorry, you've come to my private chambers. I don't entertain many people here. Please, bear with me."
He lifted himself from the pool and led them through a doorway on the far side, into a lounge area with seats. The walls were drier here, and the light came from shuttered, old-school lamps, similar to the ones used by the sisters. It smelled of the sea, salty and ancient, but the chairs were dry and she sank gratefully into one. The man nodded at them.
My name is Seeker, for now. Scarlet was struck by the sudden insight that she had no idea what Martin's real name was.
Seeker sat opposite and folded one long leg over the other.
I am sorry to have you brought here like this, but you see, we don't have a great deal of time.
About 3 days, I'm guessing.
He raised an eyebrow, and she found herself staring as his face shifted around. She could watch it for hours, it was better than TV.
So you know what is coming?
She shrugged, finding nonchalance coming far easier this time. She was getting better at this.
What does any of it have to do with you, if you don't mind my asking?
She could feel Martin's look of surprise, but she ignored it, keeping her smile to a minimum.
That was cool. That was better than cool.
She was talking to a 7-foot-tall dude who lived in a swimming pool beneath Shepherd's Bush, and she was acting all calm and collected.
Ha!
Seeker sat back, steepling his fingers before him.
Well, you see, I have an interest in the world continuing past Christmas Day, and why are you called Seeker? Why not Dave or Ahmed?
That was less cool. That was, in fact, very much uncool. And a bit geeky.
Damn it.
I find things that people want. In this instance, I am finding information. Someone is attempting to raise the undying, which means someone has found the grave. If there is someone out there with that knowledge, I should be able to find it.
Martin spoke for the first time since they'd got there.
What will you do with it once you have it?
Seeker spread his hands apart and smiled.
I will ensure that no one else has it, of course.
So why do you want us?
The smile widened.
Well, a little bird told me that you have a very clever computer, and that computer might have given you some information which may prove very useful to my search.
A little bird?
Do you mean Twitter?
Friends of mine. Friends who have both the time and inclination to browse Tumblr.
Scarlet blinked.
It was one thing to be deep beneath London talking to a guy who looked like a cross between the Mummy and the Little Mermaid. It was entirely something else when he started talking about Tumblr.
You're telling me you use Tumblr?
He shook his head, sniggering.
God, no, what a terrible thought. I tried Facebook for a time, but it's such a time suck, and I always end up feeling diminished.
He shook his head, frowning.
But some of my people do, of course.
He leaned further forward, holding one hand up before him.
So tell me, Scarlet, what did you find on your Tumblr account this morning?
What's it worth to me?
He opened his eyes a little wider, then grinned and clicked a finger.
She saw them from the corners of her eyes, dark figures appearing from the two doors, spreading out around the room.
Well, your life, for one thing.
It was, in hindsight, entirely predictable. What was it about the magic fraternity that, despite all the wonderful stuff they could do, it still came down to threats of violence?
What was wrong with asking nicely, or bargaining, maybe?
She glanced around the room. There were 7 of them, all as thin as the man who'd brought them here, all carrying long, curved swords with thin blades. They were, she was fairly certain, unlikely to respond well to her asking where the toilet was.
Scarlet swallowed and shook her head.
What else do we get?
Your life isn't enough.
It's a start.
Seeker sat back, eyebrows raised, and chuckled, talking to Martin.
She has stones, this one, more perhaps than you. You chose well.
Martin, in a dry tone she'd never heard from him before, replied,
I didn't choose, not as such. But she asks you a reasonable question. Why should we tell you?
Because you have as much concern about the world ending as I do. Do you need any other reason?
Fair point. Surely there was something she could get from this.
What was happening? When did she suddenly become like all the others, desperate to get something?
Actually, she'd always been like that, only before the quest had been for chocolate, or pizza, or maybe both.
The silence stretched out, and she was about to give up when Seeker shrugged and cracked his knuckles.
I can offer you information in the future, should you need it.
Her first thought was of Martin and his wife, and she realized things had changed.
She nodded.
That sounds reasonable. This is what we know.
She told him about the poem and the horse and book, but stayed quiet about the necklace. He didn't have to know everything.
When she'd finished, he was nodding.
These things, the horse and the book, what are they for?
He was looking at Martin when he said that, and her master shook his head.
I don't know, not yet. But we'll work it out.
Seeker stood, paced once across the room and back again, clapping his hands together.
Well, enough, I suppose. Where are you bound now?
Martin stood, clearing his throat.
We have others to visit here before we leave. We shall see you again, I'm sure.
He headed for the exit, and Scarlet realized time was up. She gave Seeker a wave and headed after Martin. Only once they were back in the tunnel, beneath the yellow glow of the bulbs, did Martin speak.
That was well played, my apprentice. Well played indeed. Information is never given cheaply, not down here. You failed to mention the necklace, I noticed.
Yeah, it must have slipped my mind.
Look, Martin, I didn't mention this before because we didn't have time, but when I put it on, I hear voices.
His head jerked up. Do you recognize them?
No, but they know about me. They said they were going to kill me.
Did they say why?
Something about charms of undoing?
Martin grabbed her hand, nodding at her with eyes wide.
Are you sure that's exactly what they said?
Yeah, something like,
we must find the Slater girl before she finds the charms of undoing.
Did they really sound like that?
Like what?
Like a sort of bad James Earl Jones impression.
She shrugged. Well, maybe not quite, said Darth Vader, but it was pretty deep.
He nodded. That's terrific, really.
What, that they're going to kill me?
Oh, no, well, that isn't particularly good news, but the charms of undoing may well be the only chance we've got. Now we need to figure out where they are.
Yeah, and like, what they are, you know?
He nodded absently, then turned and strode away. Come, we can visit the healer before we have to get you home.
Does no one around here have normal names?
He chuckled.
Do you not find it useful?
I'd have thought naming people by their skill set was the most logical way to behave.
Well, yeah, but what about if you're a street cleaner, or you do advertising or something? It's like really bad superhero names.
He gave her a look and shook his head. I don't think you'll find too many of either of those down here. Come.
He set off at a march, first through the market, then down one of the many tunnels branching away from it. This one was better lit than the others, and there were doors at irregular intervals bearing dull metal plaques. Peering at one on the way past, she spotted a MGC dot, a Lewis Hardsteady, curses pertaining to matters of the heart. What is this, some kind of health center?
Martin laughed. This is the underworld. If you can think of it, this is where you can get it.
Ooh, okay, I'm thinking of Johnny Depp with the Pirates of the Caribbean moustache, but like jeans and no top.
She paused.
Right, where is he?
Martin stopped and stared at her, brows creased together.
Is nothing serious?
She grinned sheepishly.
Should he have the top on? Is it the nudity bit?
He sighed, long-suffering, and she poked him in the chest.
Lighten up, fella. It's not all doom and gloom.
Actually, I think you might find it is. The voice that spoke was familiar, although she couldn't place it, and when she turned around, she found she didn't know the face at all.
He was remarkably normal, with the worst sort of emo haircut that meant she couldn't see his eyes, and a big puffer jacket.
He was wearing a smile that made him look about 15, but when he lifted his hand, the fire burning on his palm was very serious.
Is he from the council?
She spoke from the side of her mouth.
No, I'm not sure where he's from.
Martin raised his voice.
I'm sorry, I don't know you. What can we do for you?
The man-boy smiled and shook his head.
Even in my wildest dreams, I didn't expect you to actually say that. What can you do for me? You can die.
His hands shot forward and the fire came hurtling toward them.
Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard, you can find more at cairnswrites.com and come back in a week for the next episode. You can also find me on Pinterest, Facebook, Goodreads, and Twitter, or email me at michael@cairnswrites.com.